Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the 14th episode of STT Rewind. I'm your host Owen Hughes, editor of SetTheTape.com, and I'm joined as ever by Set The Tape writer Steve Norman, coming out one day early ahead of the World Cup semi-final. We're switching the running order around ever so slightly this week for a bumper TV section, which is up first. Steve and I continue to be in the grip of World Cup fever and take a look at TV ratings and the race to be the biggest terrestrial broadcaster. In part two, we return to our trusty film topic to ponder the Ant-Man and the Wasp opening in America as filming on Captain Marvel wraps. Matt Latham's cassette tape finds a quirky non-gig story for you to stroke your chin at, while Free Play is in a podcast groove. Now, let's get on with the show. I'm switching the order around on the podcast this week because I just can't not talk about football, Steve.
Yeah.
Or more specifically, the so-called ratings war between ITV and BBC, which we'll get onto lately. I think, first of all, I've got to make two apologies, though. Firstly, I'm sorry if you hear background noise. We've got the windows open. We are in the midst of a heat wave in the UK.
Yes, for our foreign listeners, it's 18 degrees and we can't cope.
We've had to take our coats off.
I'm currently wearing a cardigan, and that's about... No, it's like 30 degrees. It's mental.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So we've got the windows open, so apologies if you hear any background noise, but I can't do it with the windows closed. I will cook in this room. And secondly, I'm also sorry to anybody who's listening and who is sick of the World Cup. But my God, I'm so bloody excited.
I won't make
it.
Any apologies for the non-football fans listening, because it has only happened once in my life. Well, once in my memory that I've been able to get really excited about the England football team and not hate certain members of our squad, even though I'm supporting them. It happened once. Euro 96, I was 9.
Yeah.
I was 3 in Italia 90. I can't remember it. So this is like a weird experience. I said to a friend the other day after we left the pub where we usually watch England games in tournaments, I said, how many times have we stood outside here after a quarter final or a group stage or a round of 16 stage of a tournament utterly disappointed? This is weird.
Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense, does
no.
it?
No. But as well as that, no one expected England to get to the semi-final. We're playing well, not great, but we're playing well. And also, they just seem likable. They just seem like yes, they're paid far too much money for the job they do, blah, blah, blah. Yes, there's people who do other jobs that are much harder, who should probably be paid more than what a footballer's paid. Yes, we get that. But all of these lot just seem like nice people. Not when we've had, I'm not going to name names, but there's certain people that have been in England squads before, and I can't swear because this isn't Failed Critics, it's Set The Tape, but there are players who have been in England squads before who have been great footballers, perhaps even world-class footballers, perhaps even better than the footballers that are in this current setup, but have just been not very pleasant human beings. To be a professional footballer, you probably do have a bit of an ego. I play with people in the level I play at who've got a bit of an ego. but they probably do have a bit of an ego. Some of them are quite cocky and confident. You'd expect that in the job that they do. But they just seem quite likeable, quite level-headed, no massive egos, no real arrogance about them. And the manager just seems like a fantastic person who's not an FA yes man, as I must admit I thought he was when he got the job.
Quite. Yes. But to bring this back to what we normally do and set the tape, which is we have a TV section. And I think what's probably quite interesting to talk about with the World Cup from perhaps a slightly different non-sports focused perspective, if we bring this into to talking about TV, is this idea of the ratings war that both ITV and BBC are going for. Because, you know, it's the age-old battle between the two big British terrestrial television providers, BBC and ITV. You know, Sky Sports, BT Sport, ESPN, Eurosport.
Yeah.
And Free Sports, Satanta Sports, you know, they don't get a look in at the World Cup. It's purely BBC and ITV.
There's a list of sporting events that in the UK have to be shown on free-to-air television.
Yeah.
And the World Cup is one of them. Channel 4 have never seemed to get a look in, whether they've bid before or not. Channel 5 probably can't afford to, let's be honest, without being too derogatory to the people at Channel 5.
I actually quite like Channel 5's news program.
Okay.
I think they do quite a good job with their news program. But anyway, yes, I know what you mean. Yeah. They're not on the same... Their championship coverage is pretty good.
Yeah.
I like their Football League coverage. Yeah. They do a much, much, much better job at it than ITV in that regard. But yes, they're not going to get the big, or even like, they're not going to get Formula One.
No.
They're not going to get, you know, the Olympics. Yeah. They've got what they've got and they do well with it, I think.
Back to what I was talking to about the list of events. So there's an Ofcom code for sports and listed designated events. Category A, which are events that must have live coverage made available to free-to-air channels, although pay-per-view networks may share live coverage, are, in football, you've got the World Cup, European Championships, all matches, not just England games, the FA Cup final, that applies to the women's game as well, the Scottish Cup final, Scotland only, and the Women's World Cup and European Championships. You've got the Grand National and the Epsom Derby, Rugby League Challenge final, the World Rugby Union World Cup final. So, interestingly enough, with the World Cup in Rugby Union, every other game could be on pay-per-view only. The World Cup final for Rugby Union has to be shown on free-to-air TV. Wimbledon Tennis Championships, Olympic Games, Paralympics, and the British Grand Prix. So only the British Grand Prix in Formula One has to be shown.
So, with all those things, it has happened in the past. I don't think it happens anymore. But you used to get simulcasts, basically, where two... TV networks, TV channels would both broadcast the same event at the same time.
It will happen with the World Cup final, I believe.
Just the final.
Yes, because I think it's something to do with if England were to get to the World Cup final, it's sort of deemed unfair for one broadcaster to be able to show it than the other. I think the World Cup final will be shown on ITV and BBC, certainly if England get there.
Okay. Well, that makes sense because what's happening at the moment is both teams. just saying like Fabian Delph then, talk about them as a machine.
Yeah.
Both broadcasters, both networks, they are boasting a little bit about their viewing figures. So according to the Radio Times... 23.6 million viewers tuned in to ITV to watch England beat Colombia.
The interesting thing with this, the viewing figures is, it's not taking into account how many people might be in a pub or a bar or one of these big outside screens. I suppose it's, I don't know how they do it. Are they seeing who's tuning in a pub? So say the Red Lion, and that's counting as one viewer. Because they don't know how many people are in there, or are they just excluding all sort of pubs that might be showing it, and it's just household viewers?
Well, it used to be. I don't know how it works anymore with ratings because we are in a digital age. Mm. I'm sure it's much more sophisticated now. It used to be a long time ago that some TVs would have like a receiver in there that would basically count towards the viewing figure. So they wouldn't know exactly how many people everywhere were watching a certain thing, but they would know an average based on the figures that came in from these particular sets of they could say, well, we estimate that there are this many people watching. Mm.
I mean,
but I don't know whether that's different now with digital.
No, but anyway, we've got the fact that people are watching it on big outdoor screens or in pubs or even big groups of people around a friend's house. But 20 odd million people watching, that's a third of the UK population.
It's a third, yeah. So there's a third of households.
There's a minimum of a third of the people in the UK watching these games, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, and also...
You need Peggy Mitchell to die to get those kind of figures anywhere else.
Well, yeah, possibly. But you've got like 23.6 million viewers tuning into ITV midweek.
Yeah.
Remember, this wasn't a weekend, this was midweek. Yeah. 19 million, more than 19 million, closer to 20 million, tuned in to BBC's coverage to watch England beat Sweden and reach the semi-final.
Yeah, with it being a Saturday... The viewing figures are lower because more people are out to watch it on the Saturday. Also, the game was a bigger game. It's one step further. It's a quarter final, not a second round match. So more people, because of the atmosphere, you want more people are likely to go out and watch a game. So there's going to be more people in the pubs watching it or outdoor screens or whatever watching it. So that's going to reduce the people who are the viewing figures that you'll get for like television. So, you know what we were just talking about. Yeah. I think, you know, Wednesday night game, it's still a school night. People have still got work the next day, so they might not want to go to the pub to watch it. They think, no, I'm going to. It's a round of 16 game, and England have disappointed us so many times before. Plus, I've got to get up for work in the morning. I'm not going to go to the pub. I'm not going to go out to watch it. I'm going to watch it at home. Saturday, yeah. I've not got work the next day. It's a quarter-final. We're actually playing quite well. I'm actually getting the hype now. I'm getting excited. I'm getting on the bandwagon. I'm going out to watch this.
Getting on the bandwagon or getting on top of the ambulance and to jump
that's
up and
a different,
down? And...
That's a different debate altogether or a different story altogether. But you know what I mean? It's a Saturday. It's an earlier kickoff because the Colombia game was a 7 o'clock kickoff. The Sweden game was 3 o'clock. So, you know, it's all those different factors, which mean more people were probably out watching it on Saturday, which meant there was less people watching at home, which perhaps affected the viewing figures that way. But there may well have been more people watching it.
I also think there's something a bit odd about boasting about like viewing figures. It's a captive audience. You know, of course the viewing figures are going to be so high. It's nothing to do with the quality of the broadcaster.
It's not like EastEnders competing against Corrie.
They could have Adrian Childs hosting again, basically, and they'd still hit 20 million. Right.
Nobody is not watching it because of the coverage. Nobody is looking for, England are playing tonight, quarterfinal of the World Cup. I'm going to watch that. Oh, it's on ITV. I can't stand Martin O'Neill. I'm not going to bother watching. That's not happening anywhere.
That was to just pluck a name at random.
Out of the hat.
Good. But I think because we're slightly running over on this section, so I just want to wrap up quite quickly. But let's say... England beat Croatia.
Yeah.
Let's just say it happened, right? Okay. And we're into the final and we're playing Belgium or France. And you get to Sunday afternoon and you go, right, we have to make a decision. Which channel are we going to watch this on? Who are you going to pick based on what you've seen from both channels?
I would probably go for BBC. One, there's no adverts, so you get more coverage. The advert, obviously ITV, they have adverts, you know, people know that. That's what ITV do, that's fine. But especially when it's half time and you.
Toilet break, though.
Yeah,
isn't
but
it?
I mean, if you're looking for a bit of analysis at half time, ITV have a lot less because they've got to get two ad breaks in. I actually like Rio Ferdinand as a pundit. He seems to be quite honest. He seems to be a good pundit. Shearer isn't actually as miserable as what he makes out, and he's quite good. And Lineker, I think he's a good, very good host. ITV, I just don't like quite as much.
I have stuck up for ITV's pundits in the past. I've liked the people they brought in. I like Lee Dixon. I think Lee Dixon's great.
Yeah, Ian Wright's been fantastic. Now
he's basically embodying the enthusiasm, isn't he? Ian Wright?
He just seemed to be the class clown. Now he's a bit more serious, and he gives some good punditry. But he is still that excitable person. He's genuinely excited about the football and the England team. But he's not there just for people to laugh at anymore.
No, and I quite like Slaven Bilic as well. He's a bit chummy, and he's a bit matey, but I kind of I think it works in the, what they've got. I mean,
Gary Neville, who's come over from Sky, is obviously very good.
Very negative, though, because I don't have Sky Sports, so all I hear about is Gary Neville's a great pundit and commentator.
Yeah.
I think he's just really miserable. I've never heard someone be, apart from Mark Lawrenson, perhaps.
Ryan Giggs is terrible. But I'll tell you what has impressed, and this has been brought up ages ago. The two women England, female in England internationals, yes. Or former internationals, Enya Luke, I don't quite know what's going on, but she seems to be very good at football and not get picked for England. Maybe that will change now the other guy's gone and Phil Neville's in. And Alex Scott on the other chat. They have...
been great.
Yeah, they've been fantastic. What I think a lot of it is they know they're going to have to be good to sort of... It's a shame that we're in this situation where if they were not good at it, they would probably be ridiculed and people would be going, why is there a woman in there? This is the Men's World Cup. It's not my opinion, but it's the opinion that many people would have. Whether that's right or wrong, it's probably wrong.
Well, I think it's wrong.
Yes, but that's the opinion many people, especially football fans, would have. And they are probably aware of that themselves because they seem like quite switched on people, quite intelligent people. They've gone out there and they've really done their research. They've really looked at the teams that they're covering in whatever games they've been or whatever programs they've been doing. So whether they've been doing a pre-match program, a live commentary, you know, in the studio for a game, they seem to have really done their research on, and they actually seem quite well versed in what they're talking about. Obviously, they've played football to a very high level themselves, so they can capable of talking about football itself and how the game is played. But they seem to have really put the yards in to research who they're talking about, the players, the teams they're talking about.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think they've both been a breath of fresh air, actually. It's quite nice having pundits who've taken, not just read the sort of Bible that the pundits all get given who go to these things. You know, all the sports journalists get given a hefty 700-page book with information and stats about each of the teams and players. They seem to have actually researched further than that. I mean, there's always the argument. It's the same thing. Like, it came up when John Terry, your favourite player, of course, when he...
Oh, don't get me wrong. Fantastic footballer.
Yeah, but when he had to go at Robbie Savage, saying, well, why should I listen to what Robbie Savage has to say about the game? He's never played at an elite level. But that's the argument that's being levelled at some of these female ex-pros or current pros. But at the same time, if you actually stop and listen to them, they're very sensible, very insightful, and they completely dismiss that notion that, oh,
yeah. Going back to that notion of things, I think it was Marcelo... No, it was one of the old Italy coaches. I can't remember who it was, but he never had a professional football career as a player, but he was a fantastic manager.
Well, Jose Mourinho's an example of that. You know, he was a semi-pro goalkeeper, was he?
Yeah. I think it was Arrigo Sacchi. So he's one of the best managers of all time, fantastic football manager, barely had a playing career. And somebody sort of questioned that once. And he said, I never realised that in order to become a jockey, you had to be a horse first.
That's a great line.
Yeah. And he won Serie A with Milan. He won. He was runner-up with Italy at 94 World Cup. He won a lot. And that was kind of his, you know, great coach. And that was what he never played a football professionally. And that's... So it kind of sums it up, really, that you don't have to have played or done anything to an elite level to be able to talk about it.
In the film section of the podcast this week, I thought it would be a good idea to look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Brie Larson recently tweeted a picture of a calendar and a movie clapperboard to indicate that filming has wrapped on Captain Marvel, which will be the next MCU movie after Ant-Man and the Wasp, which is already out in America. In fact, speaking of, according to Callum's, that's Callum Petch, writer for SetTheTape.com, according to Callum's US box office report on the website, the sequel opened to $76 million this past weekend. Is this a good state of affairs? I mean, I can give you a bit of context around that if you want, Steve. It's $20 million more than Ant-Man, which was previously their lowest ever opening weekend. Now, One of the, in fact, Callum points this out himself, rather tongue-in-cheek. You know, he posits that, is it because it's Marvel's first proper female-led film? Or co-led film? You know, Wasp, which is Evangeline Lilly's character, is in the title of this movie, and it's worryingly low for an opening weekend. And of course, you know, we've got pointing towards Captain Marvel coming soon. Should we be concerned that there's a... teetering around the word misogyny here. What do you think? Is it reading too much into it, maybe?
It could be many things, mm-hmm. let's be honest. I think the reason it's not done as well as it perhaps would have liked isn't because it's female-led or female-co-led, because... I just think from the way other things are going at the moment, that's probably not the case.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it's like in America in terms of what people get up to in the summer, but it's the summer. People go on holiday. People, I know you get summer blockbusters, it's a thing, but as well as that, you know, we saw with Solo, that didn't do as well as the box office as what people expected or predicted or would have liked.
But what happened with that was, obviously, there was a reaction to that from Disney, who are... pretty much canning the idea of doing expanded extra non-Skywalker Star Wars properties, right? I mean, they're reining that in.
They're certainly rethinking it, aren't they? They've cancelled a lot of what was in the pipeline and everything, so...
So do you think they might make the connection here that, well, it's because it's got a woman in the title?
They're going for
a very geeky market, right? And horrible sometimes as it is to think of it. I mean, there is an inherent misogyny around comic book nerds, you know. I'm not saying it's all of them. The writers certainly don't seem to be that way, or the ones that I read anyway, and the community and the people I engage with don't think that way. But, you know, then it's long been a joke, hasn't it? I mean, comic book guy in The Simpsons, the old joke was that he was, you know, he didn't know how to talk to women. And, you know, I have seen that kind of thing where a woman walks into a little comic book shop and some of the male nerds in there don't know how to react or treat her as a bit weird or odd.
I don't think it's that. I mean, perhaps it's even come down from Infinity War. People are just sort of like, you know, how's it going to top Infinity War? I'm not that fussed about it. And that's not because it's female co-led. It's not because it's a bad film. It's not because they don't like the character. It's just like...
It could be because it's Ant-Man.
It could be many things. It could be a combination of many things. I don't think the sole reason is because it's Ant-Man and the Wasp rather than Ant-Man 2. Let's look at the positive side of it. It's made 20 million more than what Ant-Man did.
Yes, but...
So people obviously like the character, or characters.
Very positive outlook, Steve. Yeah.
If in another 20 years' time, if we have another Ant-Man film, it might make another 40 million, and it just shows that people are liking that character more and more.
Yeah, I think that's how I would feel about it as well. My worry is that Marvel probably wouldn't.
If I made the film, I'd be thinking about it that way.
Yeah, I'm sure.
If I was trying to save my job at Marvel, that's the way I'd be pitching it.
Well, yes. I mean, the other thing to point to, of course, is that Wonder Woman was fantastic. That was a great film, received very well. And it's opening weekend. Bear in mind, this isn't a Marvel Cinematic Universe film. This is DC. This is separate in a cinematic universe that has been critically panned from the get-go. Wonder Woman's opening weekend was $103 million.
Mm.
So, and that's even got the word woman in the title, Steve. It's got woman there, right in the name. And yet that's still made over $100 million.
Yeah.
So... you know, it's I think you could read too much into it. The worry is that Marvel might do that or Disney might do that.
The only way for sure we would have known if it was because it's a female co-led film if they called it Ant-Man and Wasp Woman. and then we'd know for sure.
Maybe they'll do that for the UK market.
Yeah.
We can but hope.
Mm.
But next up on the podcast is Matt Latham's cassette tape with some on again, off again, never really on at all music news.
Be kind, rewind. It's the Cassettes Hype with me, Matt Latham. When is a gig not a gig? They give this philosophical opening statement, but you'd expect a gig to have an audience, sometimes, a promoter, a venue, and a band. In the last few days since the time of recording, there was a gig announcement that turned out to be a hoax. Friday evening, the Camden venue Dingwalls released a tweet announcing that the band Venison were playing a one-off show at the venue at 10:30 p.m. the next day for £25 a ticket. A poster showcased the band's name in a style that was very similar to another well-known band. Tickets were only available on the door between 12 and 2 on the day. Venison was the name that the Strokes used for a one-off gig in London in 2010, but split up to maintain a 100% record of sold-out gigs. It was, in fact, just like a warm-up comeback gig. The tweet has now gone from Dingwall's Twitter feed, and apparently it turned out that it was some ex-management that were recently let go that just posted the old poster from 8 years ago. It still led to 500 fans queuing up outside the venue since 6 a.m. in what is the most blistering heat the UK has seen since forever. The venue had to then tell them it was cancelled in person due to a hoax. It's not been fully revealed how it ended up on the official Dingwall's account, but I do fail to understand how it took so long for someone to realise it was a hoax. I guess the lesson here is to always keep an eye on who has the access to the social media feeds. Fast forward and what's coming up in the next 2 weeks in terms of new music. Well, there's not really much coming up on my radar, really. If you're really interested, All Saints are still going around and they have new music coming out with a new album called Testament, but nothing really jumps out to me as something to keep an eye on. Until next time, this has been the Cassette Tape. I've been your host, Matt Latham. Keep listening to music, will you?
Thanks to Matt Latham there. But now we're on to free play section. And we're going to talk podcasting because our very own Tony Black was at the Birmingham Podcast Festival on Sunday. He did a live show on stage for his The X-Cast podcast. And he was there with Carl Sweeney, also a writer at setthetape.com. And Tony will be podcasting for 24 hours straight, not for Set the Tape Rewind, but for the X-Cast, which he's already raised £200 for the Alzheimer's Society. He'll be doing that on the September 1st. So that's a 24-hour podcast that he's doing. You can sponsor him, donate to Alzheimer's Society. Just go to his Just Giving page. If you go to justgiving.com and search for the X-Cast Live, or one word, you can find him on there. Steve, you used to be part of a successful podcast, didn't you?
I still am.
You still are. Oh, very flattering. Yes. But I am, of course, talking about Born Offside. Not Fail Critics. That didn't amount to anything. Not a hill of beans, but Born Offside. You had quite a career through that.
Well, that wasn't just podcasting. It was the whole blog, website and writing side of it as well. But yeah, the podcast was a big part of Born Offside, yeah.
Mm. And it got you some sort of career breaks. I don't know if people are familiar with Born Offside, because it was a little while ago you stopped doing that now.
Born Offside's probably been dead, so to speak, for 5 years now. We covered Euro 2012, so about probably 5 years. It was a football website, blog, podcast, where myself and a number of other people wrote about football, blogged, podcasted about the beautiful game.
Sure. Where did Born Offside come from? I know this, but people listening might not get the reference.
It came from, the name?
The name, yeah, literally Born Offside.
It was a name, it was a quote attributed to Alex Ferguson about Pippo Inzaghi, who was a player who was apparently born offside because he was offside so many times. And that's where the name come from. I can't remember what other names were banded around now when we were forming it. I'm sure there were some absolute stinkers, but that's the one we went with.
Yeah. It's a great name. It is a great
name. Yeah.
You got some quite decent swag out of it, you were telling me earlier.
Yeah, well, I mean, as well as it leading to a bit of paid work, freelancing sports writing work, which is a way, not for Born Offside, but elsewhere, it led to that. Yeah, it got quite big. It was just a different time for football blogging, where sort of it did seem like every man and his wife had a football blog. And some of them are still going and doing fantastically well, but the industry seems to have changed and there's not as many people doing it now. But it used to be quite a popular thing within football. Mm-hmm. And we were doing quite well without being too arrogant. And we would get some free stuff, whether it is actual football boots from Adidas, sort of asking us to write a little review on, like, product review on them. If Adidas seen who they were sending their boots to, they would have not reconsidered. Right. If they said to me, before we send you these £200 pair of football boots, can you please send us a photograph, your vital statistics and your playing history? They would have taken one look at it and gone, no. but they didn't. So we got, you know, some free Adidas Nike football boots, goalkeeper gloves for one of the lads who was a goalkeeper, I think. Before Euro 2012, I got sent a brand new England shirt, a case of Carlsberg and some other tat. Essentially it was tat. It was like a football flag and other bits and pieces.
There's one thing that you mentioned just a minute ago as well, which is quite interesting. I think people sometimes see, like, bedroom podcasting, I always call it. It's basically people just go into their rooms with a microphone.
That's what it was, essentially, yeah. The podcast.
But you said it kind of led to other opportunities, right? And yeah, I think that maybe sometimes people... some people just do podcasts because they want to do a podcast, which is absolutely fine. That's why we used to do Foul Critics. You know, there was no intention that would lead to something.
No, we never intended on Born Offside getting us anything good. It just happened that the blog and the podcast was quite good, especially when we were at kind of the pinnacle of what we were doing, and people liked it, and it was quite well received.
Yeah, but you said you got into, like, some London radio stations.
I managed to get on a few London radio stations. Other people were sort of guests on sort of TV shows, like guest analysts, pundits, whatever you want to call it. We had one guy who managed to get to be a pitch side photographer at Republic of Ireland International. It was really quite great. How well we did. And it was just like Fail Critics and like this, I suppose, people recording it in... bedrooms, living rooms, whatever. We never met up and recorded a podcast. But yeah, it was a great experience, really.
But you said it, so you've written for some quite notable things off the back of it as well, like notable sort of outlets. Squawker, I think you mentioned.
Yeah, which I was with when they were at ground level, when they started out, and wrote for them for a number of years, actually. And they've gone on to great things. They're doing fantastically well, unfortunately without me, but they're doing great stuff. I've got a lot of time for the guys who started that website, because they're doing great things now, and it was really quite innovative at the time, because it's, for those who don't know, Squawker is primarily stats-based. It's all based. They get all their data from Opta, and they create a lot of their output around statistics in football.
Data mining.
I certainly did when I started out with them as well, and it was all creating articles around statistics and data from football.
Yeah.
So it was quite new and innovative. So Opta were putting out all the stats as they always did, but no one was really creating articles and opinion pieces around the stats that were being received. That was great. And I also did work experience with 442 magazine and managed to get a couple of pieces in there, and various other websites. I did a sort of online internship with goal.com, who were quite a big website, and got a number of pieces on there, a couple of which ended up being, you know, viewed by many people. It was a great experience, really. And a bit of a shame I had to come to the end, because I think people from listening to this episode and maybe other ones have realised that I can talk about football far more intelligently and far more comprehensively about football than I can about film and television.
Maybe.
Because essentially I got onto Failed Critics, which is where Set the Tape grew from as well. Somebody said, does anybody want to start a podcast and website? And I said, I don't really know that much about films, but I do watch a lot of them. What I have done is recorded and edited a podcast for years, and I can write quite well. If you want me, I'll do it. And for some reason, they said yes, and then they kept me around.
Yeah, and now we've still kept you around. But
you can't get rid of me.
STT Rewind, yes.
Yeah, I'm like a virus.
You're the only person who's been on every episode of this so far.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't miss many episodes of Born Offside or Failed Critics.
Yeah, you are nothing if not consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm the player who won't get dropped from the five-a-side team because he's there every week and you can depend on him.
You're Leon Osman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will be there. I might not do much when I am there,
yeah,
but at least I'm there. You can depend on me to turn up.
Well, ending on a football analogy seems quite fitting.
Yeah. Why am I in the football team? Because I'm willing to drive to games.
Thank you for listening to another episode of STT Rewind with me, setthetape.com co-editor Owen Hughes, and my co-host Steve Norman. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes and Acast by searching for Set the Tape, and don't forget to leave us a review and a rating, unless you are planning to leave a low rating or bad review, in which case, don't. Otherwise, any support you can send the show will make a massive difference to us. Let us know what you thought on Twitter and Facebook, both at Set the Tape, and why not check out some of our daily articles featured on our website at setthetape.com, including our weekly US box office reports, and join in our box office Premier League predictions. Plus, you will be able to find reviews and features on all the latest movies and TV shows. Thanks for listening to this episode. We'll be back again in a fortnight.